Thank you, Chair. Good morning, members, and good morning to the department and the colleagues. The program for today, Wednesday, the 2nd of November 2016, reads as follows. Opening and welcome, Chair. Apologies. Adoption of the agenda. Briefing by the Department of Labor reflecting on oral submissions that were received during the public hearings held on the 22nd of September on the Labor Laws Amendment Bill. And then the members will deliberate on that presentation. And that presentation will be followed by another briefing by the Parliamentary Legal Advisor, also reflecting on the same comments that were received during public hearings. The members will then deliberate on the presentations, and then it will be the consideration of the outstanding draft minutes of 19, 26, and 27 October, and then the closure. Thank you, Chair. I have only received two apologies, one from Honorable Khawla, who is busy with party activities. He said he's out of town. And also from the DG of the Department of Labor, who is also, I think, overseas. That's what I received. Thank you, Chair.
Do we have a letter from the DG? Members. Lodi, honorable.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, in terms of the agenda, I wanted to propose, can we do away with the first deliberation so that we get both presentations and discuss thereafter? I'm avoiding a situation where we are asking legal matters when a presentation is still to be done. That's on the adoption. That's why I'm amending. Yes.
But can we...
No, first, Chair, I have to raise the amendment so that they say if they support it or not.
But I don't see that. I don't think there's anything which is changing in the agenda. I think what is being suggested, instead of saying first presentation and then we deliberate and then second presentation and deliberate, the member is suggesting that let's listen to the to both presentations and then we deliberate at one goal. Am I right, Honorable? Honorable Van Schalkwyk?
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to move for the adoption of the agenda with the amendments.
Okay. The agenda is adopted with those amendments. Members, we know that this agenda that we're dealing with today, it is the agenda that was meant for the 26th October, but because we had an emergency meeting that we had between the department and the AG, it was then moved from our agenda to today. I wish to welcome everybody who is in the house. I think there are only two faces that I'm not familiar with. Can we then introduce ourselves, the gentleman there and then the other gentleman at the back?
Karixti Kaburo from PNG.
Thank you.
I'm now with Jerica from the DI.
Okay. You are welcome in the meeting. Let's then go straight to the department.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Mukalifi will do the presentation on behalf of the department.
So in the absence of the DG, we have been advised that Mr. Mafat, the commissioner for CF, is the acting DG. So we do have DG amongst ourselves. If there are issues that have to be directed to the DG, he's here with us. Thank you. Mr. Mkalisi?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, honorable members. We submitted, honorable members, our presentation, trying to respond to some of the issues. The first clarity that Song Agenda Mosiak wanted was whether the ten days referred to in the bill refers to whether working days or calendar days. And our response initially was working days, but when we relook at the Act in the definition, the present Act in the definition defines weeks as 7 working days, 7 days of the week. Therefore, what it means is that then where the Act refers to weeks, it means calendar days, 7 calendar days, because the definition in the present Act, although the amendments don't define, but the present Act does define the weeks.
So thank you, Mr. Mukalipi. I forgot that we have a new member in the committee. What we are doing, Honorable, is to, we had public hearings on the private members' bill. So the deliberations that we are having today, both the department and the parliamentary legal unit, is responding to the questions that were raised in the public hearings. So they are giving responses to those questions. And what we will be doing as the members of parliament, we can ask questions of clarity, any other questions, but we'll have our own session as the members then to look at what has been raised and see what we agree with, what we do not agree with, and have a final decision as the committee. So today we are not going to get there whether we agree with them or not agreeing with them, but what we are doing today is to get clarity so that when we meet ourselves, we understood exactly what is that they were saying. Thank you, Mr. Mkalipi.
Thank you, Chair. The other clarity or question or amendment that Song have was that they proposed that the Section 25.1 of the BCA must be amended to provide for 6 months paid maternity leave claimed by both the parents. Now, presently the BCA does not provide for paid maternity leave. It provides for maternity leave. And the payment of thereof is regulated by the UI. The UI pays people who are unemployed and also who are on maternity leave, but the BCA does not. Now, it's a little bit confusing when they say the UI must be amended to cater for maternity leave of 6 months and 75 days, as they indicated. We're not sure whether then what they are asking is that employers should be paying for this maternity leave, because the BCA talks to benefit of workers. The BCA would not have a provision for payment that is paid by employees. You don't have that in the US, in the BCA. Always the BCA talks to benefits, and those benefits are provided by the employers. Now, if that's their proposal, that proposal was not part of the original bill, and it was not even discussed at NEDLAC. It's very difficult to introduce policy intervention at a later stage that have got cost on the parties themselves. If their proposal is that the bill the UI then must pay for as they are requiring 100%, because remember UI is not paying 100%. That's another issue that comes to cost. Remember members were here I think early last month, where we gave a costing of all the amendments and amendments that were proposed and indicated what the fund could afford and what the fund could not afford. And it makes it very difficult because all the amendments that were in the current bill were costed and the fund was comfortable that they can be funded. When at a later stage now their proposal to re-look on the funding formula, the cost, it makes it difficult because UI works on the basis of advice given by qualified actuaries on what is affordable and what is not affordable. Now it makes it very difficult to respond here and say, well, the increased days are affordable, because it will mean that we must go back to actuaries for actuaries to look at it and say what is it. And we know that in some of the proposals, that like the issue of resignation, the actuaries have said that they are not going to be affordable. And some of the proposals that are coming in here are already increasing the cost to the UI. Therefore, from our side, we think that if the request is for UI to fit the bill, before we say yea or nay on the issue, we've got to look on what effect it will have on the fund. If it's the effect is that the employer must bear the cost of the increase, then we think that it makes sense then that parties at NEDLAC should engage on that and be able to put a view in front of the committee. And on those basis, we think the proposal put by Sonke, although it creates some complication for us in terms of going forward on the issue. The next area that they are raising is about Section 25 of the Act, where they want both mothers to be entitled to. They are asking a question whether mothers are entitled to both maternity leave or adoption leave. Can you claim both? That's the question that they're asking there. Can you claim both? And also, they are questioning the fact that adopting fathers may have options. When an adopted father, they say you might have option to take 10 weeks adoption leave or take 10 days paternity leave. And they are arguing that this is discriminatory because if you are a father who's a father of the child but you're not adopting, you don't have an option of taking 10 weeks because you're not adopting. But if you are a father of an adopting child, you can take 10 weeks. That's their argument that they are putting. Therefore, they say there could be an issue about discrimination on the section. Now, what we're saying in terms of our response on this issue is that the issue of whether mothers are entitled to both adoptive and maternity leave is that you can't have both, because the Act clearly defines what adopting is about. When you claim maternity leave, you must have a doctor's a certificate that shows that you've given birth. When you claim adoption, you've got a court order that gives you the adoption. Therefore, if you've got a court order, you can't produce a court order and say you want maternity leave, maternity payment when you produce a court order. You can only claim maternity payment if you've got a doctor's confirmation that you've given birth. Therefore, for us, we don't understand the confusion in terms of the two, because the document that you need to produce to claim any either are different. Now, if the question is, can you, if you do both, you give birth and adopt, can you claim both? Well, technically, yes. I mean, if you give birth, if you adopt some child today, and then you give birth later, technically you can, because you've done both as a woman. You've given birth and adopted the child. You might be able to claim, and the law does not deal with that, and doesn't say that if for whatever reason, I'm sure it's going to be in very unlikely cases that happen. Maybe the regulation will have to explain that issue, because the law doesn't deal with that. But if it's purely a separation where you give birth or the other woman adopt, it's clear what's the process. But if it's one woman that does both at the same time, the law is not dealing with that issue. Therefore, when you read the law as it is, technically you might be able to claim both adoption because you've adopted and claim maternity benefit because you've given birth to a child. The next issue that they're raising is around section 25C, capital C. They also looking that to increase again the time periods to 6 months, and they want it to be paid 100%, that is 75%, 25%, 100%. Comes back to the same issue, it's an issue of cost. This is a new proposal, the cost of it, if we must even consider it, is going to take another, we think, 4 months for the actuaries to look what effect it will be. Members must understand that the cost to the fund, although many people look at the fund and look at the reserve and say the fund has got money, therefore it can introduce all sorts of benefits. The issue is that if you're running an organization, it is prudent that the running cost of the organization be paid from the income of the organization, not from reserve, because what happens if reserves get depleted? Do you take away the benefits? And what will be the consequences of taking away the benefits? You know, when workers have got the benefit, when you go back, not even workers, it's society. When the society has got the benefit and then you want to go back because things now are not what they were yesterday, you close back on those benefits, it creates a very difficult situation and disruption in the labor market. And we think if you do that, it will create disruption in the labor market, and that all the benefits have got to be funded out of the 2% that UI is getting. If you want to increase the benefit, put more benefit, then there's got to be, and those benefits are not affordable in terms of the 2% that UI is getting, then a discussion should start on increasing the contribution to a higher level. Now, the issue of increasing the contribution to a higher level introduces other complications, because it's one thing increasing the contribution. If the increase of the contribution leads to job losses, then what you do, you're increasing the contribution for people who are unemployed and increasing the number of people who are unemployed. Therefore, you've got to balance the increase to the contribution so that it does not affect employment, and also the increase on benefit. And this proposal does not deal with that. The next, please. We're going to COSATO proposals, and when we saw these proposals, and I mean, COSATO, I mean, we spoke to them and said COSATO a little bit naughty, because COSATO part of the NEDLAC constituency. They were involved in this process in the debate of this private member's bill in NEDLAC. They never raised at NEDLAC these new proposals that they are putting now, increasing of the period from 6 to 4 to between 4 and 6 months. They never raised this proposal. And there's an unwritten rule at NEDLAC that says if a bill comes to NEDLAC and there's an agreement on the issues by the NEDLAC parties, then it comes to Parliament. It is expected that NEDLAC parties will stick to what has been agreed at NEDLAC. Unless there's a disagreement, if there's a disagreement on an issue, then parties can raise that issue in Parliament and lobby further for that issue in Parliament. But if there's an agreement on the issue, it is required that all NEDLAC constituencies should be in support of what has been agreed at NEDLAC by themselves. Now, COSATU did not raise this proposal at NEDLAC. It was never discussed by all the other social partners. It's put here. But the other issue is a cost effect of the same. They know that they've seen the actual report, both dealing with this bill and the previous bill. They understand the cost to the fund, and they understand that the agreement of the NEDLAC constituents in the fund was that whatever benefit that we're introducing into the fund should not result in the increase of the 2% that the parties are paying into the fund. And I'm so, I mean, many people, when they look at the 2%, they think it's not a lot of money. If you're earning 1,000, 2% of 1,000, what is it, 20 rand per month, something like that, to 2,000, 20 rand, if you're earning 1,000, 10 rand. But the cost comes in, if you are a company and you employ 30,000 workers, you pay, your wage bill is half a billion, and 2% of that becomes, a percentage of that becomes bigger. And that's where it affects employment. When you look at individual employee, the individual employee it could be very little for them. 2% might not make a difference. But when you look at the bigger scale, if you look at a company like Lonmin that employ what, 40,000 workers, a 1% change in their wage bill can affect employment. And that's our response on the COSATU. And the other issue is that COSATU is part of the agreement. That's when we agreed on the previous bill that we've got to give time to those benefits that are agreed in that bill so that we can see what effect are they having on the funds, the expenditure. Next, please. The proposal by CGE, they're proposing to amend Section 25.1, 2A and B, that they seem to be suggesting that in terms of the bill as it is, a worker might give birth and not be entitled to maternity leave. And they want to close that gap where there'll be people that could not benefit. We don't understand how could it arise if you give birth, because remember, maternity benefit are not coming out of your credit in terms of the deal. If they were coming out of your credit, yes, you could have that situation. Let us assume that you are employed 14 weeks into, and then you apply. You don't have enough credit. Or let us assume that you work, you get retrenched, you apply for unemployment insurance, you get paid, your credits are depleted. And then you get employment. Then 2 weeks down the line, you must give birth, you apply for maternity leave benefits. Then you can't be paid because your credits are finished, because you were retrenched before you got disappointment and then you have to give birth. But that's not the case here. Payment of maternity leave is irrespective of your credit, whether you've got credit or not. if you contributed to the fund for 13 weeks, that's the only issue, is that you must contribute to the fund for 13 weeks. If you contributed for the 13 weeks, you're entitled to maternity benefit, full maternity benefit, without touching your credits. Therefore, there's no way where an employee could apply for maternity leave and not be able to get maternity leave, as long as they've contributed into the fund for 13 weeks. For 13 weeks. If that's the issue of the 13 weeks, whether there should be a qualification period. Remember, unemployment insurance is insurance. All insurance have got some qualification period. And normally, if you have, I mean, the chances of, if you have not contributed for employment insurance, and the chances of a company employing you, I'm not saying that should be, I mean, companies know, make all excuses not to employ you when they can see that you're going to give birth just now. And because for their own reason, the chances of then of somebody having to claim and not having 13 weeks are very minimal. I'm not saying that it will never happen, but are very minimal in practice. And that's our response on that. The next proposal that they are making is that Section 26A, capital 8A, must, the way it father, where it says that this section talks to a father, and I'll read it for members so that members could understand what it, that they are saying. It's a section that says if the contributor has been registered as a father of the child, in terms of the death and what act, they are proposing that the word father should be replaced by parent. It's not here nor there because the parent is both. The reason it's father here is that a mother is automatically registered when a child is born in hospital, is registered. And the people that normally are not registered, sometimes you've got absent fathers who are not part of the process, and sometimes somebody gets raped and gives birth, the father is not registered, and that's why he's talking to a father. But if members are comfortable with parent, it does not create any harm whether you say parent or father. But I'm just explaining that the rationale of putting father, not a parent, is that it's trying to deal with, and it's more fathers that might attempt to claim benefits, paternity benefit, by bringing picking up a child in the street that they are not registered in. It's not like a mother is not going to be able to do that because, as I've said, a mother is registered automatically in hospital. Now, if you make it open, you could have people who see an opportunity and pick up all sorts of people in the street and say, but it doesn't make any difference because whether you say a parent, whether you say a father, because the parent includes the father, the parent. That's a proposal they are putting. Therefore, for us, we're leaving it to the committee. If the committee feels comfortable with parent, it's not here nor there. If they feel comfortable with father, it still does not create any harm on that proposal. Next, please. Now, the next issue that they are raising is that the Act talks about parental responsibility leave. It talks about maternity, adoption, and all of those leaves. They want the Act to talk parental responsibility, to say parental responsibility leave, instead of defining them and say adoption leave, commissioning leave, and all of the terms that have been used in there. Our problem is that is going to be a little bit confusing because the BCA already talked about family responsibility leave, which is not paid by unemployment insurance. It's paid by the employer. And we thought that the way we put it, and also people who are adopting, they know what adoption is. Therefore, when they look at the Act, they see the word adopt, they would know that they could benefit immediately, instead of having them to go and ask every time they do it whether they've got it, they've got those rights. And people who are using surrogacy processes, they know the issue, what is commissioning, what is all of the terms that are being used. When you go through that process, you know. But if you are not involved in surrogacy, you don't have to know adoption, I think, commissioning and all those terms. If you are not adopting, you've got nothing to do. I mean, you don't have to know what is it needed until you want to know that. Therefore, we think that if you clamp it all together, it's going to confuse more our clients, and they might not come forward and claim the benefits that are in the bill because they did not understand whether the benefits are there in the first place. That's why we felt it is important that the bill say exactly what benefit this is giving, so that a person who's adopting know exactly that they've got those benefits, and having one generic grid that will talk to parental responsibility leave. The last comment that we not making any comment is Mr. Stenbranch, who is the person who initiated the petition for this bill. When we look on his submission, is just in support of the bill that is the petition that he has put, and that now we're dealing with, and there's no issue for us to comment on that. Those are the comments. I'm not sure that I've missed anything, my colleagues.
Thank you, Mr. Mkhalipi. As we have agreed, as to how we are going to proceed, we'll give over to the parliamentary legal advice. Good morning, members. Thank you for this opportunity to give legal services a view on the various comments that was made. I just want to set out what my submission is, contained in my submission. Firstly, I'm addressing in the various public submissions there were proposals for amendments. Then I'm also some of the submissions made proposals for additions. In other words, those weren't in the bill. So my comments will address that. Then I've gone a bit further. I've looked at the Unemployment Insurance Amendment Bill. That's the bill that was before the committee, I think last term. That bill is currently before the NCLP. And in that bill, there's various provisions that may impact on this bill, so that we don't create a situation where there's discrimination in relation to the one type of leave and the payment arrangements in relation to one type of leave to the other. So I'm addressing those, and then there's just one small technical amendment which I'm alerting the members to. Okay, the way I've structured it, I've compiled it into the various types of leave which there were comments on. The first one was the comments on parental leave. Now remember, the parental leave is the 10 days working, 10 days parental leave. And that is given to the other, it can be given to the biological father, or it can be given to either of the parties in an adoption or a commissioning in a surrogacy agreement. So when I'm talking about parental leave, I'm talking about the 10 days. Now the first submission that was given was a submission from Sonke Gender Justice. They wanted included in the parental leave an additional thing which they call perinatal leave. Now the perinatal leave, this is when a leave that is taken when the child is not born yet. In other words, the doctor's appointments and all of those. So they wanted an addition of that, and they wanted an addition of 10 working days. And then after the child is born, they wanted the parent to take 10 working days after the child is born. So in total, it will be 20 working days. And this they want
the mother of the child, then they wanted to give 6 months maternity leave, either to the mother or the adoptive parent, one of them, or the commissioning parent, and that should be paid at a rate of 75%. The perinatal leave they wanted to be paid at a rate of 100% of the salary. The parental leave, in the case of adoption or surrogacy agreement, they wanted to commence 1 month before the child is born, and then the leave can be staggered over the next 3 years. So that was basically, the rest of the 3 months can be staggered over the next 3 years. That was basically their submission. Now my response is perinatal leave is not contained in this bill. This is only once the child is born that the leave is taken. This is something additional, and as we heard from the department, this will have cost implications. So it is for the committee to decide whether they want to include this type of leave. I just thought I'll bring the policy position of the member when I assisted her with drafting this bill. She was of the view that she wanted to prevent any possible abuse of claim for parental leave. The reason and the way she did it is she made it a requirement for the biological father to be registered as a father in the Birth and Death Registration Act. So in other words, if you are claiming it, you are automatically saying that you are the father, and this, she thought it will also assist with any claim for the child afterwards, maintenance claims and all of those, and there won't be a dispute about paternity. So that was the reason why she said that. And then for the adoptive parent, that parent must be the adoptive parent in terms of the adoption order, as well as the commissioning parent. That's your parent that becomes a parent by way of a surrogacy agreement. That person must be in that order, must be stated as a commissioning parent. So that was just the policy intent why perinatal leave was never a consideration. Then further, the bill does not amend the provisions that relate to maternity leave. Since there was a request here now for an extension of maternity leave, this bill didn't deal with that aspect. Currently, the Basic Conditions of Employment Act provides for 4 consecutive months, and the proposal here was for 6 months. That's also another cost implication which will have to be looked at if that is a consideration that the committee wants to take forward. The bill provides for adoption leave and commissioning parental leave of 10 weeks. The Unemployment Insurance Act already sets out the formula of the amount to be paid. So their proposal about the rate at which it should be paid, that's already catered for in the Unemployment Insurance Fund, and those were the things that were costed. Secondly, there was a proposal that the word parent be defined. It is unclear whether it refers to the biological parent only or whether it includes caregivers, step-parents, or legal guardians. The bill is for, as I said, it's for the father, which will be your biological father, and the adoptive parent, as well as commissioning parent. So in my view, there's no uncertainty as to who can claim parental leave. Then there was, further on the parental leave, there was a comment from the Commission for Gender Equality. They proposed new amendments on the way the bill should read. They said an employee who is the parent of a child and not entitled to maternity leave, or of any person who is unable to exercise their right to maternity leave, is entitled to compulsory parental leave as of at least 10 consecutive working days as follows. A, the parental responsibility leave must commence on the date of the birth of the child or on the date that the adoption is granted. So my views on this is, at the moment, the way the bill is drafted, it's an amendment bill, and it's drafted in a way so that it can fit within the current structure of the bill. We don't want to introduce something totally foreign. So that's why the bill is drafted in such a way to make distinction between the various types of leave. and so that when the implementation comes, it fits with structures that are already there. With their proposal, it is unable, they don't say when a person is unable to exercise their right to maternity leave. So they also have a reference to compulsory parental leave, and this seems to suggest that a person don't have a choice whether to take the leave or not. So my view is that the wording is not practical, and I therefore recommend that the current wording be kept. Then the second comment that they made on parental leave is that they wanted to include an addition to say that the employer may not deny or set off parental responsibility leave against any other leave benefits that are due to the employee. Then similar insertions they wanted to include in relation to adoption leave as well as commissioning parental leave. Now, it's my view that the inclusion of such a provision is unnecessary, as the Basic Condition of Employment Act does not make provision for the set-off of one leave against the other. So such an inclusion would therefore be totally unnecessary. Then they make a further comment in relation to parental responsibility leave. They wanted to have this general term for all the types of leave to fall under this category of parental responsibility leave. My view is that this amendment, as I said previously, it was drafted to make it fit within the current Act. The Basic Condition of Employment Act categorizes various types of leave, and the Unemployment Insurance Act has the corresponding provisions that deals with the different payment of benefits for the different categories of leave. It sets out the requirement for the payment of the corresponding benefits of the Unemployment Insurance Fund. And providing, therefore, if we're going to provide for a general term to deal with the various provisions, it will then require that the Unemployment Insurance Act be redrafted as well as this Act. So it's going to require a total redraft if we're going to get, if it is that we're going to have this one broad parental responsibility. And as Mr. McCullough said, it's going to be confusing. People's not going to know when they require, when they are entitled to which benefits. The way it's drafted out makes clear who can go for what. So it's therefore my recommendation that we keep the current terms in the board, which is your adoption leave, commissioning parental leave, maternity leave, and parental leave. There was a submission which was given by both Kustaki and Sorge Gender Justice.
Not the phone. The microphone and the speaker are as well.
Okay, I'll just move over to this one. Then there was a proposal for in relation to adoption leave. Both Sonke Gender Justice and Kusatu felt that the restriction of adoption leave to a child below the age of 2 is unjustifiably limiting. The reason why it was drafted, why the member drafted it like this, to restrict it to a child below the age of 2, is that currently, as it is in the Unemployment Insurance Act, was that you can only claim for benefits for adoption leave if the child was below the age of 2, which is why the link was made also in relation to the Basic Condition of Employment Act. So that was the rationale, was to align the two acts with the current position which is in the law. So whether to increase the benefit to children above the age of 2, that's a policy decision that the committee will have to decide whether it wants to include. So that's a decision the committee has to take. We should note that if we decide there is a decision that it should be extended to children above the age of 2, we will have to look at Section 27 of the Unemployment Insurance Act, that an amendment will have to be effected there. Section 27 is not currently in this bill, so we're going to have to look at another provision in the Act. Another comment on the adoption leave, one from Sonke Gender Justice. They propose 10 working days for the one adoptive parent after the child is physically placed with the adoptive parent, and then send 6 consecutive months for the other adoptive parent within the first 3 years that the child is to be adopted, is physically placed with the adoptive parent. Linked to that, COSATU made a proposal that the 10 weeks of adoption leave, let me first deal with the first issue. The proposal for 10 weeks adoption leave should be amended to be the same as maternity leave, which was the proposal for 4 to 6 months. As adoptive parents do not need to recover from having given birth, provision should be made for the adoptive parents to subdivide this 4 to 6 months adoption leave. Now, the rationale for giving 10 weeks when the bill was drafted, as opposed to the 4 months for maternity leave, was that the adoptive parent or the commissioning parent, that person does not recover from birth. Now, if you look at the Act currently, the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, it provides that a person who miscarries during the third trimester or who bears a stillborn child is entitled to 6 weeks maternity leave, which commences after the miscarriage or stillbirth. The period for adoption was then therefore shortened to exclude a period for recovery after birth. So that was the rationale for having the two different periods for adoption as opposed to a person giving birth. The cue was taken from the Act currently, because the Act had provision for 6 weeks recovery period for the mother. So, but again, if the committee feels it should be the same, there's no, if they feel it should be the same as the adoption leave, that's a decision, as maternity leave, 4 months, that's a decision for the committee to take. There was a request from Sonke Gender Justice. They wanted the wording in the clause to be amended so as to activate the adoption leave from the moment when the legal permanent alternative placement pending finalization of adoption order has been granted, rather than the granting of the adoption order. They were saying that sometimes the child is being placed with the mother way before the adoption, and the adoption process takes a while, and then that person is not able to take leave even though the child is with them. I went to go look at the Children's Act, and the Children's Act sets out when a placement order is made. The Children's Act says that a placement order may be issued by the Children's Court if the child has no parent or caregiver, or has a parent or caregiver, but that person is unable or unsuitable to care for the child. Such a child will be placed in foster care, temporary safe care, pending the application for and finalization of an adoption of the child, at a shared facility where the different caregivers or centers alternate in taking responsibility for the care of the child at different times and periods, or a child youth care center. So, Section 244 further provides that if an adoption order is rescinded, the court may make an appropriate placement order in respect of the child concerned. So if you look at this, the placement order is a temporary order. It's either way given while the adoption is still being considered. My view is anything can happen between the placement order and the adoption order. Or it's given when the adoption order is rescinded. In other words, the court now decides the previous decision of giving the adoption order. So therefore, if we then link it to a placement order, anything can happen between. It's not a permanent order. So it's therefore my recommendation that we keep it to the permanent order of adoption, and that the employer only be entitled to draw unemployment, I mean, draw from the unemployment insurance or take adoption if once that permanent order is granted. A similar comment, I'm not going to read through all of it because it's a similar comment to what's given on adoption leave. The same they wanted, 10 working days before the child is, before the birth of the child, as well as 10 working days after the birth of the child, but it must be taken within 20 days of the date of birth of the child. And then the other parent gets parental leave of 6 months. So that's in a surrogacy agreement. Mr. Ter Blanche made a similar comment that one commissioning parent should get 3 months and the other should get 10 days commissioning parental leave. Again, the consideration here of perinatal leave wasn't a consideration, so the 10 working days before the birth was not part of the policy intent when the bill was drafted. And the 10 weeks, the 10 days after the birth of the child, that is currently covered for, catered for a commissioning parent. And the rationale for giving the 10 weeks as opposed to the 4 months, again, that was to cater for the period of recovery for a person who has given birth. A person who makes use of a surrogacy agreement, that person hasn't given birth, so there's no recovery period. Then there was a new leave proposal. This proposal was given by Mrs. Blanche. It was elderly care leave of 1 day. This wasn't part of the consideration of the bill. It will also have cost implications. So this is also a policy decision whether the committee wants to look at such a type of leave at this stage. But it's coming in very late in the consideration of the bill. Then this part is now dealing with proposals with what's in the Unemployment Insurance Amendment Bill. The reason, as I said, why I included it is because the rate at which people who claim for maternity benefits is going to now differ from what people who claim for adoption benefits will be able to claim. Now, if you look at the Unemployment Insurance Bill, Clause 4B, it stipulates the following. For the purpose of Part D, maternity benefits must be paid at a rate of 66% of the earning of the beneficiary at the date of the application, subject to the maximum income threshold set out in paragraph A. Now, currently, the position in the Labour Laws Amendment Bill, if it goes through just like as it is now, is that the benefit applicable to parental leave, adoption leave, and commissioning parental leave will be paid out at the scale provided for in Section 12.3b, and that scale is at a maximum of 60% of the remuneration for lower income contributors and a lower rate of remuneration for higher income contributors. So there will now be, as I said, a difference in the payment. So it is my suggestion or proposal that a similar provision be inserted to make this type of benefit applicable to parental leave, adoption leave, and commissioning parental leave as a right, as all they all relate to the caregiving of a child. The second one is in Clause 5 of the Unemployment Insurance Bill. It's got to do with the calculation of benefits. Clause 5B stipulates the days of benefit that the contributor is entitled to in terms of subsection 3 may not be reduced by the payment of maternity benefits in terms of Part D of this chapter. The payment of maternity benefits may not affect the unemployment benefits. So it's my proposal that a similar, that this also be linked to the payment of adoption benefits, payment of commissioning parental benefits as well as parental benefits. Rationale again, it all relates to the caregiving of the child. clause 9B of the unemployment insurance bill, and that's got to do with the right to maternity benefits. Deals with that section. It says that a contributor is not entitled to benefits unless she was in employment, whether as a contributor or not, for less than 13 weeks before the date of application for maternity benefits. Making this requirement to people that claim for adoption leave, in other words, they must be in employment for 13 weeks before the date. So again, a similar provision to be to link that to the payment of commissioning parental leave, adoption leave, and parental leave. The last one in relation to the Unemployment Insurance Amendment Bill. Clause 10 of the Unemployment Insurance Amendment Bill. The section has got to do with the application for maternity benefits. It says that an application for maternity benefits must be made in the prescribed form at the employment office. And then previously it said at least 8 weeks before the childbirth, but now it says any time before or after the childbirth, provided that the application shall be made within a period of 12 months after the date of childbirth. Now, in terms of the Unemployment Insurance Act, which is the current act, the way they pay out adoption benefits currently in terms of the Unemployment Insurance Act, is that an application for adoption benefits must be made within 6 months after the date of an order for adoption, but the commissioner may accept an application after 6 months period on good cause shown. The position under this bill, the Labour Laws Amendment Bill, is that an application for parental and commissioning parental benefits must be paid within 6 months after the date of the order for adoption, but the commissioner may accept an application after the 6 month period on good cause shown. So it's my suggestion that a similar provision be inserted to make this type of requirement to parental leave, adoption leave, and commissioning parental leave. Again, it relates to the child, the caregiving of the child. In other words, also to make it at any time after childbirth or after the adoption order, provided it is made within the 12 months, and not having that 6 month limitation as in the case of adoption at the moment. And the last one is just a technical amendment, just a short, I think it's an oversight by me. The substitution there is clause 9C, the section number reflects the wrong section, and we should just change subsection 4 to 3, 4. I should change it to subsection 4 and not 3. And then again, just the clause below that. It was just a small oversight. So that's just a small technical amendment that I want to bring in the A-list. So that's my submission. Thank you, members.
Thank you to the department and to our legal advisor. You want to add, Ms. Mkalip?
Yes, I wanted just to speak on the new proposal that the legal advisor is putting on the table. This is the first time we hear them. They were not referred to us. That was making things a little bit difficult. And also, some of them have got cost implications. I remember the costing of this bill was based on the provisions that were put in the bill. Now, if you change 66% or 60%, you're changing cost effect in the bill, and maybe we need to look and see what the actual is, why they base it at 60%, what do they do to the affordability of the bill. But the main issue is that in a disadvantage, in that it's difficult for us to respond because we've got to apply our mind on the issue, new issues that are put on the table, and indicate and advise the honorable members properly. We don't know how to deal with it.
Thank you, Mr. Mkalipi. There are two presentations which are quite similar to each other. very detailed, and suggestions are put forward by our legal advisor. And as I have said earlier on, that members will be given an opportunity to engage by asking questions or clarity-seeking questions. And then the following meeting will be ours to unpack everything, and so that we can get to the final a list or final a bill for the committee. So, any member who wants to say something? Okay, I've got four hands in that order. Honorable Loliwe, after Honorable Loliwe, Honorable Mkongi, and Honorable Madisha, and the last is Honorable Ollis, in that order.
Thanks, Chair. I want to welcome the presentations by both parties. But after what Ms. Demkalipi has said, I'm a bit concerned. Is engaging this going to take us anywhere if you're saying there's some work that needs to be taken to the actuaries for costing purposes? And also, I need to caution all of us, because dragging this for longer than it has delayed may also have a negative implications, because already, remember, the sponsor, Mr. Terry Blanche, was already complaining, though we are not following it as something submitted by him, because we are following it as something that has been submitted by Ms. Dudley from ACDP. I just want to check, having all said all that, from the department, It's clear that UIF may not be in a position to foot the bill, if I read your presentation well. What then is your proposal? Because you can say, I thought you'd be giving us something to say, in terms of this, the department cannot afford. But if, for instance, it was this, the department can take it somewhere.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I just want also to follow Honorable Loliwe to welcome the report. Fortunately, the Chairperson have warned everyone in this house that I'm new and then debating this matter. Now there's a confusion that I have here in both presentations, which I want clearly. Are we discussing the private members' bill, or we're discussing the labor laws amendment bill, or we're discussing unemployment insurance bill? What are we debating, actually, in order to take us on board to understand what is at stake here? For an example, there are many clashing issues that when we are debating the unemployment insurance bill, you relate it to the Land Basic Conditions of Employment Act and also to the Labor Laws Act. So now it confuses me exactly whether we're dealing with the private members bill or we're dealing with all the bills, because it impacts in all of them. The last question is the one that I'm interested in. I want to know, what are the policy implications of tampering with the restriction on adoption leave on only in respect of a child below the age of 2? What are the policy implications? Are these policy implications or financial implications? You see, and then what is going to be the relationship between the two? Because the legal person always speaks about the policy matter, the parliament should take a decision. But the motivation by the department is on financial matter. So now I find conflicting arguments, whether it is the last one, you have put people who have made presentation, COSATU and all these organizations. But I don't get the rationale. You don't give us the rationale of the argument. I will make an example. They propose that you must explain working days and calendar days. And they had the rationale why they are asking that question. That is just one of the many presentations that you have done, that you are not presenting the rationale of the presentation of these people or of the submission.
Thank you, Honorable Mukongi. We are discussing what deliberating on a private member's bill that was sponsored by Ms. Honorable Dudley from ACDP. What we are discussing now, it's the questions that came up in where public hearings in Parliament. So those are questions that have been identified as from the what people sponsored as to how the bill looked like. You understand what comes out of public hearing. So both parties have taken out some questions there, and then they put their own advice to us as a legal advisor. I'm not saying your questions must not be answered, because in any case, it does have it does affect all the other bills. So that's why when they will speak, they will say it is not in UIF, it's like this, and BCA is like this. But I'm sure when they respond, they will respond to that fully, but from the side of the committee, that is what we are doing. It's a private member's bill by ACDP through Honorable Dudley. Thank you. Honorable
thank you.
Madisha.
Thank you, Chairperson, and honorable members, ladies and gentlemen. Well, I think it's without putting them in a corner, this actually comes as a result of the existing pieces of either legislation and or agreements that are there, whether in NEDLAG, etc., etc. I think it comes as a result of that. Now, just to check a few things, because like I'm saying, it may not be feasible for them really to debate and so on. Why? Because, yes, listening has been done from the workers, from the unions, etc. And now this is the response that they have been able to, attain. Now, the one thing that I want to check with them, actually two things, is that thou not declared, I wish to understand from you that given the dispute between the Trade Union Federation, you have quoted COSAT, and the department on the matter that you spoke about, what page is that? I'm sorry. Okay. Okay. where you indicate that you have not, you know, agreed, where you indicate that it will become extremely difficult, that's in my own thinking, for you to basically take that and move forward. Is then not feasible for us to find a way of dealing with that particular issue? Don't you think it will be possible? I understand through you, Chairperson, it may not be, rather, it is not going to be possible for us to have that finalized in line with the instructions that you've given. But then I am saying to the department, I would propose that, yes, COSATU, as you say, has gone to NETLEC. There was no discussion, as you put it. There were no agreements, etc., etc. And that particular point was raised here, okay? And according to you, you believe that this ought to have been discussed and agreed, you know, to upon at that particular level. Now, I'm then saying that don't you think it is feasible, at least for us, given the period at this stage, to go into this thing, to take into consideration those kind of points they have raised, so that we then can be able to look into this. I know that they are not the only federation, there are other federations as well, but then we're talking about the workers here, etc. And I want to put them together to say they obviously are having that kind of problem. Is it not a feasible, Chairperson, through you, to find a way of resolving this particular point that they have raised? They're having problems, as you put it, in NETLEC, that has not been dealt with, BCA, obviously, etc., etc. But can we find a way of dealing with that? Now, the other thing, Chair, the legal advisor, I think through you, Chair, Madam ought to have done a little bit more. I don't think that was enough, because on very many occasions, one had contradictions, you know. I mean, one would not want to go into a number of those particular points. However, let me refer you to Section 244. Where you indicate that the various pieces must be kept given what already exists, okay? Remember, we want to make sure that we move forward, we change, we alter wherever we can to improve this thing, the bills, so that the workers here can be able to move forward properly. And yes, you have indicated, I can't remember the name, that yes, here we can improve, yes, here we can improve. But in very many other instances, you have, in my own understanding, insisted that we can't or should not move because that already exists in other pieces of legislation, albeit something can and has to be done to handle that. That's why I'm saying I refer you to 244, which, as you put it, something truly has got to be done because there are a problem. So in my own understanding, there won't be any improvement, albeit the necessity exists, even in that particular area and in other areas as well. Now, the fact that the department has not interacted. I think that's where the chairperson comes in, and I agree with her. The fact that you have not interacted with the department, that takes us back. It basically says that we must go, or you must go and have that kind of interaction so that we come back and have, you know, we then can be able to move forward. Now, therefore, the question, Chair, will be to yourself as our leader to say how much time then do we have, because we're talking here about the bill, we've got to move forward, etc., etc. How much time do we have so that we then can be able to see, to look into this for purposes of change?
Thank you, Honorable Madisha. That question will be answered in the due course. How many in due course? Honorable Follis?
Thanks, Chair. First of all, we have some questions of procedure that I think we should have clarified already, which we clearly haven't. So I need the department to talk about the procedure we're following here. There is an amendment to the UIF bill, which the department's been working on for a long time. I understand that. But then we're talking about this bill being discussed at NEDLAC. And that's where I have a procedural problem. First of all, when a private member's bill comes to Parliament, until now, a certain procedure has been followed. And the procedure has been that Parliament has given a decision in principle about the basic concept behind the private member's bill. Parliament has almost never supported a private member's bill. And Ambrosini's court case will go as to why that is the case. However, there have been, I think, about two in the last 20 years. And the procedure that was followed is that the bill came to Parliament. Parliament would take a decision about the desirability, which is an in-principle decision. And if the bill was decided, if the committee and then Parliament decided it was desirable, it would then go to NEDLAC after we've decided that it's desirable. And then NEDLAC would deliberate, give the minister a text, which would then go to the various procedures of Cabinet, which would then finally come back to Parliament as a final proposed text. And then the normal procedure of Parliament would be followed. Go through both houses, if necessary, provincial hearings, or go to the traditional leader's house if it was required, depending on the tagging. So now I'm hearing something else. So my question is, has the procedure changed? Because if it's already been to NEDLAC, my question then is, are we going to send it back to NEDLAC after we've made this decision about the desirability of the bill? Or are we working on the final text now? Is this the last shot? Is this, we're going to decide on the final text, and then it's not going back to NEDLAC. It's not going back anywhere. It's going to go to the NCOP and then to the President for assent. Because what I don't want us to get into is a procedure that involves forum shopping, you know? So I need to know, is this going back to NEDLAC or not? Because if this is the final text and we're not sending this to NEDLAC and it's not going for any further deliberations, then we have to be very careful about the content and make sure that we absolutely get the text 100% right, because there's no further deliberations. This is it. So
I need clarity from the department as to the procedure that we're following. The second question, I actually agree with the ANC, particularly with the whip of the ANC, that we cannot as a committee approve amendments, wherever they've come from, that are not costed. So whether it comes from Crisatu or whether it comes from Gender, Sisonke, or whether it comes from Mr. De Blanche, or whether it comes from me, the point is we can't just don't amend these things where there are financial implications, because it will affect the UIF and it may affect employers. So if that is the case, that this committee wants to support amendments to the text, we can't then next week go and vote on this thing, do a clause by clause. Then it has to go for another round of financial calculations with your actuaries. And I agree then with the ANC that we can't just accept amendments from third parties that have financial implications. If the amendments just are amendments to the wording of the act, of course we can deal with those next week, we can approve them, and that's that, if they don't have financial implications. But if there are amendments that have cost implications, like changing from 4 to 6 months, or changing the number of days that have to be paid for, or changing from 66% to 60% of salary, or even in some cases 100% of salary, we simply can't do that next week. That has got to be costed. So both of these are actually kind of procedural issues. And then, Chair, just to you, we need to know when we must go and get a mandate from our parties, because obviously at the point at which we have the version that we're going to vote on, that version I've got to take back, and I'm sure the ANC and the other parties have to take back to their caucus to get a mandate before we vote. But I don't want to go and ask for a mandate on a text which is going to change, because then I don't know what I'm asking for. I might have to come back and tell the caucus, no, sorry, we're changing. And I don't want to do that. So if you could tell us when it's going to be the final version that we can take to our caucus to get a mandate. But thank you to all the presenters. I mean, that was very informative in terms of telling us the position, particularly Mr. Kalibri and so on. I appreciate the input. Thank you.
Honorable Ollis, I think we might have, or you might have, forgotten some of the processes that we have gone through as the committee. Remember that when this private members bill was referred to us, we then sat as the committee and ask ourselves whether it is desirable. We passed through that stage because all of us, we said yes. And then we had to ask the department whether they do have money, because there was no way that we could proceed without them having gone through that process and check with NEDLAC. Remember, we went to elections, and when we went for elections, we left with an instruction to the committee secretary, an instruction that said, once the NEDLAC says yes, go for the advert, don't wait for Parliament to open. We took that decision as this committee to say, members, do you give myself go ahead to instruct the secretary to say the advert must go out if the NEDLAC comes with the response? Because we were looking at the question of the time, and we agreed, and it didn't happen during elections. So that process, we followed each and every process. Then we came back, they came back, they took us through the finances, whether they are able or whether they will not be able. Because when we were, remember, we took that decision that says, once they say yes, we will come back, then they will get into details. But once they say yes, the advert must go so that submissions can come through. So there is no process as Parliament that we did not follow. The bill might be not as fast, the process might be not as fast as we wanted, because our program is determined by the program of Parliament. So we keep on changing, moving it backwards and frontwards. Not that we want to, but because the processes that we are talking about, we can't jump them. Because if we do that, then it's really a problem for us. And we don't want to do that. We will not do that. Now, the steps that are left for us, I will give them the opportunity to talk, maybe to remind you of other processes. The steps that we as the Parliament or Portfolio Committee have to follow now, we are left with three steps. Third step will be to adopt the report. What they are doing now is to go through all these questions that were raised there. Questions that they think Parliament, both the legal advisor is doing that on behalf of us, because at times we don't have a legal eye when these people are presenting. So she is doing that for us. Department is doing it for all of us to understand what this is a problem or this is doable. This is not doable. And when they are saying that, they are not saying, members, we are stopping you. We will listen, we are listening. And after this, this is the time now you should go back to your parties and discuss, so that when we come back, then you will be in a position to sponsor your party's position, because you would have been given time to go and sit. If you say the time is not enough, we need more, it's something that is fine that we can talk as members of Parliament. But this is the time, this is the opportunity for us to go back and discuss as parties and come back. And the issues that they are saying, as different parties, we might have different views. So that's what is left for us. So the next step after our committee, after we have done deliberations as a committee, that is the meeting then where we will agree and disagree on how the bill should look like, or all these issues that have been raised, whether they should come in, whether we approve or don't approve, or anything that we think this committee, the bill, it's important for to be included in the bill. Wording and everything, whatever we want, that's what we'll be involved in. And once we're done with that as Parliament, the legal person who will be there all the time will be taking all what we have said that we said we want and create what is or produce what is called an A list. And that A list will be the list of all the things that we have said the bill must, or we've changed and said the bill must be like this. And it will be after that A list has been produced that then a B bill, then will come. Then after that, we will be in a position to take the bill to Parliament. So as far as the committee processes are concerned, we are on the right track. And this department cannot be behind, neither can it be in front of us, because now that this process is here, is with us. Maybe Ms. Damukalipi from your side, and then the legal, just to understand that all of us, we are on the right track.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honorable Members. The first question from Honorable Loliwe, whether what are we saying about the bill? I mean, I think there's no difference between the
Honorable Kalip, I thought you were talking on Honorable Loliwe, Olisi's question.
Oh, I was dealing with all the questions coming.
Oh, no, then let me wait for all the members to, let me finish all the questions, sorry. Are you okay, Mr. Onis? You understand this process? Do you remember now this process?
I don't understand.
I've asked my question.
Mm.
I still don't have a clarity on the issue of whether NEDLAC has signed off on this text of the bill or not. So that's what I still have. And then my other questions remain, but I'm sure the members will.
Yes, please, Mr. Mkalipi.
On the NEDLAC
issue. On the NEDLAC issue about the
bill. Honorable members, we can confirm that the bill went to NEDLAC. There were two processes that happened on the bill. The bill as it is, without the comments from Sisonge and the others. The bill went to NEDLAC. The bill was costed as a bill, and that's what we're comfortable with on the costing of the bill, and that's what the actual report to on the bill as it is. Therefore, there was deliberation. When I referred to NEDLAC, we expected that COSATU, when we're debating the bill, will raise then all the issues that they want to raise in there. It went to NEDLAC. The private member that introduced the bill was at NEDLAC, taking the NEDLAC constituency through the bill and to the debate on NEDLAC. Therefore, our side, I can't comment on the parliamentary process. On our side, we're comfortable that we've had time, we've costed the bill, we've deliberated at NEDLAC, and no constituency can say that the bill was not put at NEDLAC.
Thank you. Now, legal.
Chair, I just want to add the reason why the member was at NEDLAC before the bill came to Parliament. If we look at the NEDLAC Act, in terms of Section 5.1, it says that all proposed labour legislation before it is introduced into Parliament, that must be sent to NEDLAC for consultation. So on that basis, I advise the member to go to NEDLAC and consult them on the bill, as it is a bill that she intends on introducing to Parliament. So she did it in terms of the Act.
Thank you. I see there are two new hands. The first one is that of Mr. Honorable Tloama, and then after Honorable Tloama, Honorable Bahrain.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I just want to also add my words and say we do welcome these informative presentations from the Labor Department and the Legal Department, the Legal Department in Parliament. And also, what I just want to find out from the Labor Department is that costing, there was somewhere where you say we need for actuaries to cost, because it will not be if we are looking from the URF to actually fund, you don't have money, and otherwise if employers are to pay. So I want to know is there any study that has been made in that regard, so that you gave me an example of loanmin, that for example if an employer has got 30,000 workers, is too much. So maybe the study will help us, that how do they do this study? How does this actuaries do this study? Because I think we must also look into the factor that employees, whatever they get as a remuneration, must be able to make them survive that period. Shouldn't be just money that it comes, it left, you get it, it doesn't help as such much. It helps, but not much. And then I don't want to have, I propose that when we support this bill, it shouldn't be in any manner a way of supporting only employers for them to save. And maybe to have general statements that if we agree to 4 months of payment, it will reduce employment. So I just want to know if there is any feasibility study in that regard.
Thank you, Honorable Sowama. Honorable Bakhtin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm with your answer, I'm left a lot more confused than when I started. Are you saying we should be going back to our parties now on the bill as it stands, or do we wait until we come to some idea as to whether there's going to be any amendments to the bill? Because that's what we're busy debating today, about certain things that might be amended, days and times and payments and all sorts of things. So to go to your party and start asking for some sort of mandate and then change that mandate every second meeting would be folly. So what we need to know is today we have had a whole lot of proposals which we're looking at, and today we're getting input from the department and our legal advisor, which is all very well, it's all up in the air. I don't have much comments on it until we actually debate actual days and times. And then I will have lots of comments on it, and I'd like to have a look at the costings as well for every single amendment to the bill as it stands, because the bill was taken to NEDLAC, and our legal advisor is correct. It was taken to NEDLAC, NEDLAC debated it, it then got to a large degree passed through NEDLAC. Everyone seemed to agree, even COSATU, who now seem to be backtracking, which is normal. But the reality is, once we have a finalization from this committee saying this is what we now think is the best solution, well then the parties should be able to debate that and get a proper mandate, because to start getting mandates piecemeal I think would be ridiculous. So thank you, you've left us a lot more confused.
Thanks, Chair, I think there's absolutely no confusion here. Mr. Mkhalipi alluded to the fact that the comments by the legal advisor, they were not privy to them. What I want to propose as a way forward, let us grant them an opportunity to infuse these comments into their presentation so that next week they come with a consolidated presentation where, if possible, the affordable costing which was made initially is going to be tabled, so that we are in a position to have something to present to our parties. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Lolio. Mr. Mkhalipi?
Do we deal with all the responsive questions about classification, Chair?
I think the questions that are there, members, let's answer them, those that are at the table. But take into account that you need to do the work that is needed. And maybe another thing that you can do for us, this costing that members are talking, are relating to. If there's a way, I think let me leave it there before I create more confusion. Thank you.
Chair and honorable members, I need to explain clearly that in my understanding, there's no difference between us and the legal advisor on the bill as it stands in front of the committee. That bill has been costed. It can be afforded by UI. There's no issue about that bill. Therefore, we don't have a problem with the bill as it is. Even if the committee votes today on the bill as it stands, it's not going to be an issue. The issue is all these new proposals that have been made, not only by the legal officers, by sisonke by kusato, by gender, that has got cost implication. That those have not been costed. If members are going to want to change the bill, then we'll need an opportunity to cost those additional issues that are being put. And costing is going to take a little bit time, members, I must be honest, because we've got to procure actually, and procurement in government does not take, it's not a short process. Therefore, we've got to be able to give that that process a time. And we're saying, if we look on the actual report on the proposal that were put in, because there are other proposals, for example, there's the issue of resignation, that the actual referred, if you add anything on what now is on the table, it's going to affect the UI negatively. And that's the issue that we're putting on the table. Therefore, we don't have a problem with the bill as it is. The problem is addition. If we must now go and cost the addition, the chances is gonna, it's not going to be finalized this year. We're already in November now. I know Parliament will be closing before very soon. And procurement, as I said, is going to take a little bit of a process. Now, on the issue of the policy implication of the two-year restriction, the Honourable Member, Honourable Members must remember that adoption...
Sorry, Honourable, sorry, Mr. Kalipi, this costing, is it also going with costs? Does it include cost, the costing that you're talking about, the procurement?
Remember, the people who are doing the costing is actuaries. Mm. And actuaries are not employees of the department. You go to your actuaries, the actuaries have got to put in the numbers and deal with that. That's how it works.
So you are saying the only reason that you have a problem with these new proposals, it's because they might add more cost in what you have agreed at NEDLAC, meaning that we can start the process. The process is going to be delayed for quite some time.
Is that it's going to be delayed because we've got to cost this new proposal and then must go back and the Tunisia we've got to go back also and say these new proposals that have been put on the table.
Honorable Lollywood.
Chair, my understanding is some of these changes emanate from the public hearings that we held. Is this implying that no work was done by the department between the public hearing and today? Because it's not a matter of it's just a submission now. It's something which was there. I thought by now you will be coming to us saying, having looked at the presentations in the public hearing, this is where we stand in terms of the best of the department, or am I simplifying it too much because I'm not an official?
Okay, let me give Mr. Tawamo, you're on the issue. Thank you, Honorable.
On the issue because I asked for any feasibility study, because what Mr. Mkalibi is saying is actually talking about the experience that he knows. But in this matter, I wanted to know if these issues that were given by Songe, I don't want to say Kusato because you said they are not Songe, whether they were, is there any work, actually I'm concurring with Honorable Loli, if there was any work done, so that we shouldn't just dismiss these issues because we think they will cost money. We must have practicalities, any process that has been undertaken, so that we are able to convince ourselves with all facts, you know. That's what I want to say, Honourable Chair.
Acting DG.
Chair,
at the beginning of the process, when the UI board made recommendations for amendment of the UI bill to improve benefits, there were many iterations of the evaluation models that were done to determine the affordable benefit improvements that could be done in the bill. And I think there were a number of things that were being recommended, but the key thing was that the amendments should be done. And when we do the amendments, we should not affect the contribution rates that are currently being made, because the contribution rates would then mean workers would then have to pay more than the 1% that is currently deducted, and the employers as well. So I think the models that the actuaries developed to look at what are affordable or what is not affordable were based on the fact that we do not want to improve, we do not want to increase the rates, the contribution rates that the employers make. So the department might not have made any actuarial evaluations on the comments that came from the public hearings, but initially, I think when the actuaries look at the affordability, they also do what they call a pay-as-you-go rate, where they look at out of the 2% that we pay, how much of it goes towards benefit. And I think the current pay-as-you-go rate in the U.S. is about 1.77 of the 2%. So all the improvements that are in the bill were made to ensure that we don't go beyond the 2%. So when Mr. Mkalupi talks about the issue of affordability, is that even if we go and do the costing on these current ones, because the constant is to keep the contribution rate at 2%, we are going to go beyond the 2%. And then it means we would have, then have to go back to NEDLAC and say then it means we need to increase the contribution rate.
I think members are clear then of the process that you want to take, or we want to take, of them going back. So you are clear of that process, and we are also clear that that process might delay us a bit, meaning that our target of concluding this bill, we might not do it this year. I think I'm not going to be giving to each department again, because I think the mandate is out. All members are saying almost the same thing. However, members, it does not stop us. It's not money or the costing that is going to stop us, because those contributions or those proposals that are made in the public hearings are not going to change. They will still be the same. So we can debate as parties, can discuss as parties, because we have everything in front of us. And we can get to a decision, because whether we get to a decision or not agree with those things, the report that we'll get from NEDLAC, it will tell us which direction. But it doesn't stop us from discussing whether we want that. We might agree with the proposal. We might not agree, but it's not about the cost. Was your hand up? Honorable Loliu.
Thanks, Chair. Yes, my hand was up, and I wanted to make a proposal along the lines you've just alluded to say, now that we have been given a hint that any additional proposal will be cost effective and that there can be an issue of affordability, I wanted to say, can we then, as our various parties, go back, look at the two, and then next week we come and say this is the mandate that we have, so that we consolidate then and be able to say this is the final proposal that is coming from the committee. Because I think what today's debate has assisted us in doing is to see what the position is if we are taking the initial proposal as it is, and what becomes a situation where we have some extensions, for instance, the 4 months to 6 months paid leave, for instance. Because I think with the initial sponsor of this bill, fundamentally it was the increasing of days for paternity leave. Then is the public that came with the frills and all that, and then if the frills are not going to be affordable, rather than throwing the baby with the water, I think as a committee, let's go back to our own parties, see what can then put flesh. We may not come back with all what is proposed as new, but maybe some of the proposals here cannot have that big impact when they are factored in. We see what we put in and what we don't put in. I'm not sure whether I am not creating confusion.
You're not creating confusion. Honorable Mukongi?
No, Chairperson, I wanted to second the proposal from Honorable Loli, and he's taking us forward. But I was very concerned because we're going back to our parties to debate the issue there. But there are clarity questions that we've asked which are not answered, whether we're throwing them out not to be answered, because it's going to clarify us a number of issues.
They will be answered, Honorable Mukongi. We are only talking about the costing issue, because to some of us, we thought there's a suggestion that there's nothing that we can do until the costing issue. We could go on. There are things at the table that we can discuss. The costing issue will come when they are ready. I don't know how long will it take them, but listening at the process, I think from our side, we can be ready. And we are not forcing members. This issue that is being proposed, it's not an issue that we can vote on and say parties discuss or parties not discuss. But we are doing work easy for us, because we are saying there's nothing new that is going to come in terms of proposals. We have everything in our hands. So we can as well continue as if and take both into consideration. If there are things that have to change, they will change when they come with the costing, because that report is not going to go to Parliament. We are going to wait. It's not final. It won't be final until they come with what you are asking for. But we'll give you the opportunity to answer to the questions. Honorable Bakre.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's all very well for the Honourable Lolewe to tell us that we can go and debate it, but of course you can't. Because if these extras that we want to possibly add will make it go up to 3% instead of 2%, then that makes an enormous difference to what the party is going to debate. Because if it's going to be costing businesses a lot more for their staff, where you take the Lonman example, where they can't afford the changes within the 2%, and they say, well, okay, that's fine, we'll just pass this cost on to the business community and to the workers. I think COSATU is going to have an issue with it, and of course the business community will have an issue with it. And if that's the case, and you have to ask people to contribute 1.5% each as opposed to 1%, people might have their issues completely different. So to go back to anyone to say we are now going to debate what might happen, it's very difficult. Where we stand at the moment is we have an amorphous bill. That amorphous bill has had proposals from the public and from some of the institutions as to why it should change. We as a committee are not sure which way we want to turn, because we don't know what it costs. And I think we're very much in mid-air. We feel like we're dangling from a piece of string. And to go back to your party and to debate this, I don't think any political party would be very happy, because they'll raise the issues. Your finance people in each caucus will say, what is this going to mean? And we can't answer it. We say, well, we don't know. That makes it look really silly. So thank you very much.
Honorable, was your hand up, Honorable? I've noted you, Honorable Dudley. Honorable Matisha, was your hand up?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Please.
Yeah, thank you very much. By the way, just to understand, these members of staff, where do they come from? And I'm talking about the acting DG and all. Okay, that's the first thing. I say this because I'm talking about the waste of money. And for people to come not having done a proper job, that to me is a very serious problem. After they were told, or after it was discussed and agreed that go and do 1, 2, 3, and they come and say, we have failed, we have not. I mean, it's them that have said that. And I think that's a major problem. And Chairperson, we now are saying we must come back at whatever time. Because to me, that's a problem because, number one, we're going to spend more money to ensure that people come here. Number two, we are supposed to come up with the laws, and we are wasting time, and the people, the workers, the ordinary people, who, as one of them has put it, they've gone to NERLEC, although they have not agreed, and so on and so on. There is a great deal of expectation. Now, that is a very serious problem. Now, they're going to waste a lot of money for government. You have a problem where our time here is being wasted, where the law must be taken forward, and we are not moving forward. And that, to me, is a very serious problem. So I therefore agree that with this kind of weaknesses, okay, with this kind of weaknesses, I know you're looking at your time, Chairperson. I'm not happy. For example, they talk about actuaries, the people, they talk about the people who must do work for the workers, etc. They talk, as I said, there is, you know, this kind of, you know, a disagreement between themselves, etc. So let them go sit and do that, but this has got to come to an end so that with effect from today, we don't have this kind of thing. Therefore, let's meet as a matter of agency and deal with this kind of things. But then the people must do their work.
Members, I don't think we all understand what is that we are not happy with. Because I think it, if we're listening, the department and the legal advisor, where the proposals want more months or want more people to benefit, and many other things that they have said, they have cited which areas that will make more cost. It is here in our presentations. They have cited it. And those, I'm sure, what we are not happy with, if I can say, I'm part of the committee, so it's we, it's not them. What we are not happy with is that we needed to see. If you say it will exceed, it will exceed maybe by how much, if we were to sit here. So I think that's what we are talking about here. But to say the work has not been done when people were not general and say, we think that they did not come there and say, we think that if we add A, B, C, D, we will incur more costs. They went into detail which area now, which is, in fact, what is new, something that is new, that is outside from what, from the bill, something that was proposed, new things that came in. So I don't think we should be that harsh and say they have not done. I'm sure they have not done it our own way.
maybe they must then, we must give them that opportunity to do, or they can tell us, because Mr. Mkalipi, when he responded, I heard what he said. But at the end of the day, what members want, Mr. Mkalipi, it must go. Even if you will come back, and but it should be clear now what is that, why we cannot do this. And we are all aware that it might delay the process. We are willing to wait for that process. And I don't think anyone, Honorable Bagrate, maybe you are also all right as well, but I thought that we were saying this is not final. And for us, when we are going back to discuss, we are not going back to the caucus. We are going back as the study group that is here and discuss. Because it's not yet time. We will also be asked same questions, which, on which basis have you agreed. So that's why we are saying we can discuss what we have. And everything else will change when that costing comes back. So I don't know if there is anything else. Let me not suppress Honorable Dudley. She wants to say something. I've noted your hands, members.
Thank you, Chair. I wanted to just speak to the issue of the proposals, which may help clear up some of COPE's concerns around it. These proposals all add to what is there. As far as I understand it, nobody actually disagrees with what is there. So when I was in the drafting of this, I was liaising with a lot of people, but particularly with the workers' group, the unions, and with COSATU. And we were discussing as we went, and they fully agreed with me that whilst we would all like up to the age of 18 for adoptions to be covered, we knew full well that that money would not be there and nobody would benefit. So they agreed with me that whilst that was on our wish list, the reality was that if we were to actually take a step forward in the right direction, we should be conservative. And they were fully behind me on being conservative in terms of that proposal. Not because any of us want adoptions to stop at 2 years old, but because we know that there's a huge need for adoptions under 2 years old for people to be free to be able to take that step into adoption. It was important. So it's not going to be the perfect thing. And COSATU then said they will come with their wish list, but they are 100% behind what is on the table, and so were other parties as well. So the people who have added to this bill have added in the hope that they can extend these benefits to more and greater. But nobody is opposed to what is on the table. Now, what we've heard today is that categorically, that is the amount that is possible to squeeze out of the coffers. But no percent without raising the business and workers' amount, we can't go further than that. So no one has objected to the bill. The bill is on the table. That is going to be possible to cover, but clearly anything more than that is not without the increase. Now, none of us here want business to feel the pinch. None of us here particularly want workers to feel the pinch. We want it to be a benefit. We don't want it to be a backhanded something. So the benefit is that this is not, it's far from perfect and it's far from going to benefit everybody, but it's going to take us a lot further than where we are right now. So anyone who wants to prolong the bill and make sure that it doesn't happen, or that it certainly doesn't happen this year, is actually working against taking forward those that will benefit from this piece of legislation. So I would just appeal that I know that there's party politics being played here and there's stalling tactics, but I see absolutely no benefit in the stalling tactics when everyone in those hearings agreed. No one disagreed with the bill. They just wanted more. And, of course, we know that that is the issue. So the people who have presented here in terms of the finance, for me, are very clear. without raising workers and business amounts that they have to pay, that's the maximum they'll go to. So anything that they try, any actuaries that look at it now, are going to come up with solutions that incur additional amounts to come from both business and workers. So I'm hoping that I have not added to any of the confusion, but for me it's been very clear. I've had extreme clarity, and I thank you for the work that's been done. For me it seems like the committee haven't quite read the bill. Thank you.
Sure. We close this matter as we proposed before, because we are going round and round and round, and we are accusing now people of, for an example, on the question of COSATU, the department speaks here saying that COSATU never made this proposal at NEDLAC. Secondly, this will increase the cost to the funding. They speak about financial implications. The advisor, the legal person, is saying that the proposal of COSATU, the rationale of giving 10 weeks as opposed to 4 months, which is applicable to maternity leave, is that the adoptive parent, what. But they emphasize this is a policy decision that the committee must decide on whether to extend the adoption leave period to 4 months. Now, this is a policy proposal that comes with legal person and then it's financial. So the understanding is these things are talking to each other. So the work has been done. Now, the issue is that the bill, everyone knows it, Chairperson, and the proposals, as it is presented, the technicality is these new proposals. Now, they complicate the already costed bill and extend more cost into the costed. So the proposal says they must go and look at that one only. What will be the cost of if the bill has new insertions? That is the only thing. So in principle, we agree, Chairperson, that will go back and come back next week, and then the department must go back and redo the work, especially on the additional ones. What are the implications? And then we close the matter. Because the matter is clear, the bill is there. People commented on the existing bill, not on the new bill, on the existing bill. Therefore, they added issues on the existing bill. So that's what complicates the matter. So, Chairperson, you have closed it before, but you have opened it again. So I think you need to close the debate.
Okay, we'll do members, but it would not be correct for me to leave the sponsor outside. But we are closing it now. And members will be given, we will still go back. We must know that we have a week, another week, because we'll have to sit around in this manner again and listen. I don't know how long will it take you? Will you be able to come back next week? So that we must not say next week and you are not ready, because we want
a detailed
something that now you will convince us and be with you or differ with you. How long will it take you to do that?
If you look, if we come next week and redo the presentation that we did on, that was done by the actuaries on the bill, it will show, as the acting chair that DG has indicated, that the bill costs 1.7% as it is, and that's what the actuaries are saying. For anything changes that you make, if you bring something that will cost 1.8, 1.9, it on the administration cost of the fund, then it will go over 2%. Now, we can come back and say, this is what it costs now to do the bill. If you make any addition, just like we can say, well, we've got 10 rand to buy these two things. If you want us to buy 3 more, if we've got 10 rand, it will cost us another 3 rand. Without costing the actual proposal, we can give a report that says, the same report that we gave,
that gives you the overall cost of the amendment and what the actuaries are saying, what's the level that the cost should be. That we can do next week. But if the members are asking us to do the actual costing of what is proposed, next week can do. And we are confident that the cost, whatever you look at it, is going to come up because above that limit that the actuary has already said. How much is it going to be? Where the line is going to be? We don't know. And if the members give us a clear instruction that says, go out, cost each of one of them, and come up with the figures that says this is it, that is going to take longer. If the members are saying, redo a presentation that you did on what the actuaries are saying and what's the perfect level in terms of this, and then make the deduction on it. If you add another cent, it will mean that you're increasing that line. And if you increase that line, it's coming closer to unaffordability without even costing this. Those are the possibilities that are there.
Okay. Members, I think the latter have to go through. What do you think they must come and present?
Let me give
Honorable Trowama. You've heard what is said, eh?
No, Chairperson, you know what? Thank you. I don't know who allowed this new wish list when all the costing was done. Because that is the thing.
The public hearing.
Oh, okay. I thought.
You could have done away with it.
Okay. Chairperson, I don't want us to waste our time. I think, really, if thank you with what Honorable Dudley said. I think if the way the presentation has been made, it has been costed, is done. We need to move forward. We really need to move forward. I'm also retracting because I also wanted costing off. I'm retracting. I think we need to move on. The bill is, the matter are clear. It has been costed. We don't want more. We don't want employees to suffer. Also, the employer. I agree that we must move on.
Honorable, I'm now not reopening whether we must continue or not continue. Department, you must come back next week and give us all, you see, what you are telling us, that if you go to that level, then you will be getting to affordability. And then you look at what has been proposed and say why we are affording, or the bill is affordable, is because you have not tell us about that line. I can't use your language. Tell about that line that we must not cross. And then if we are going to cross, the new ones that are coming are going to make us to cross without adding. I think, members, we it will be fine. Yeah. So I think we are closing this matter, but can you answer the questions that are not related to the affordability and not affordability of...
I think, Chair, the question about the restriction of 2 years has really been, the Honourable Member dealt with that one. Mm. The issue of the rationale, it's all about, remember, we're responding on what the public is saying. We're moving from the assumption that the members have got all the public comments from the last public hearing, and we're going, zooming straight on the issues that we need to be doing. We did not take the rationale, what is it, why they are asking that. We assume, and apologize if we assume wrongly on that. Then we've dealt with the issue of the COSATO issue, that it's just that we've debated with COSATO. I mean, for us, it's just like my wife at home, if we discuss things and agree that we'll spend R5, and then we go to the shop, and then she's all of a sudden in the shop, she wants to spend 20 rand. Then it becomes a problem because we've reached this issue. We'd assume that if there's going to a change on that budget, we'll also have that discussion. And that's the only thing that we're raising about them on that. Not that they are not entitled to do it, but if we're partners in this, it makes sense for them to be also talking to us, that we think, although we did not raise it, that's what we're going to be raising. Of this issue. on the process of the bill, it's been already answered in terms of, I think all the issues, Chair, have been covered. And we will be able to come next week and reach the decision of the committee in terms of the decision.
Members, we are done with the department and the legal advisor. We have three sets of minutes that we must go through. You are allowed to leave quietly. Three minutes. In 3 minutes' time, we don't want to see you here, department.
Well, anyway, she
We have three sets of minutes. Can resume our meeting. Minutes of the 19th of October. All these sets of minutes have been sent to members. First page, 19th. Oh, Honorable Bahrain.
We don't need to read them through. We've been sent over a few days ago, in fact. I think everyone's read it. They're short. I propose that the 19th, we accept that.
The minutes of the 19th are proposed by Honorable Bahrain and Honorable Van Schalkwyk is seconding. The minutes of the 19th October, 26 now adopted. The minutes of the 26th October, members? Honorable Loam? is moving. Honorable Loliwe is seconding. The minutes of the 27th October. Honorable Jobo is moving. Honorable America is seconding. The meeting stands adjourned. Yeah, next week we know, okay, guys, what is that?
We'll have coffee.